Hey everybody, today I have a Hall of Fame throwback episode from last August when I sat down with the Pro Football Hall of Famer, Champ Bailey, and the Social Media Hall of Famer, Gary V. And Scott Tindall and I, we talked about what it takes to be a great teammate and also discussed the traits that make a great leader, whether you're on or off the field. You definitely don't want to miss this one.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Really, today we just want to talk about, like, what are the universal and transferable traits of being a great leader and a great teammate? Champ and I were talking outside. I said, look, I can never learn how to be a Hall of Fame football player from you, but I can learn how to be a Hall of Fame teammate from you. You know, and right. So really, you know, that's what we want to talk about today. And, you know, we start by focusing on gratitude.
Sorry, I guess I'm so used to being a host.
Take it, Gary.
I just am so interested. And I feel like I wasn't going to remember, so I had to jump in. I love that, like, I get razzed so much on the internet for interrupting, but sometimes you just can't help it. Champ, on some real shit, do you feel like you were a great teammate always? On some real stuff, I'm really curious.
Absolutely.
I don't know either way. I have no clue.
Yeah. I would be so surprised to hear anybody say different.
And just, it was always in you, or something happened early, or just your DNA? Like
DNA, I believe.
Yeah, just who
I mean,
are.
Because I grew up with two brothers. We were very close in age. And one thing I learned about being in the house with them is we had to share. You know, we had to make sure we took care of each other. You know, we had to make sure one was doing something right in order to get everything right. You know, so it was always leaning on each other, playing off each other, supporting each other. I mean, that's the way I learned.
Understand. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, that's great. Hey, you're better at this than I am. But I think the thing that all of us have in common, and that, you know, the thing that impresses me about what each of you do, is you all talk about gratitude, right? It's the foundational piece. And you know, that's one of the things I've learned from Dave. And Gary, you're talking about it all the time. Champ,
I stole it
too.
From Gary, by the way. That's what all the trolls say.
Well, it's a good place to steal gratitude from, I guess, right?
Everybody else steal it from
I stole
as well.
From my mom, so.
Yeah, steal it from Gary if you can.
Everything I have is my mom and dad, so.
What is it that helps y'all focus on that and, you know, get back to center or find that gratitude, you know, every day?
I actually go with gratitude, guilt, and scaring myself. So I've been thinking a lot lately about my mindset and, like, what is all this attention coming from? Like, why is it resonating? You know, I had this pretty unique situation at the airport where, like, the four people that came up to me at my gate couldn't be more different. 82-year-old conservative white dude, 19-year-old swaggy black boy, you know, like Latino and a Samoan woman. And I was just like looking at it and somebody said something to me, which really made me click because I've gotten so used to cross-pollinating. Some other woman, she's like, who are you and why do such different people like you? And I was like, man, I was like, because there's something in the way that I communicate. And it's really funny, lately also, a lot of people have been telling me how much they didn't like me at first, or they had to dig a little bit deeper. And I actually truly believe what I'm about to say. I do know that there's some, especially alpha, both male and women, who like me up front and some of that no bullshit thing. But a lot, I mean, I'm not convinced that my communication style is doing me any favors. I think it turns off as many people as it turns on. I just think what I'm saying is super right.
Yeah.
And so in that, this very long-winded setup, but I was trying to get everybody to understand why lately, and this ridiculously long trip to Australia and back, a lot of plane time, literally just now, I was like, wow, this is one big mix of gratitude, guilt, and the ability to scare myself. And let me explain the last part. Today, I came back to the office after being away for 2 weeks, which is very unusual for me, which means I had an enormous amount of headaches on my plate. And no matter how bad anything is, I always go to a place of, well, what if my mom got killed? Like, what if right now I got a phone call from a hysterical sister saying mom's dead, she was murdered, right? And for some reason, I do that 55 times a year. Sometimes it's my mom, sometimes it's my kids and my wife driving and get hit by, but this unbelievable ability to actually feel enormous, life-changing, deep, painful pain that just in seconds puts everything in such basic perspective that I don't know, there's nothing else. You know, I basically, you know, looking at you, Champ, I just thought, huh, if I was an athlete, I'd probably in a smaller way, but in big in that way, because I don't have this fear in business. The great thing of business over sports is I probably would have thought career-ending injury. Like, I'd probably think that, you know, give up a touchdown to some Bobo wide receiver that should have never caught it on me, truly upset, career-ending injury. get a contract dispute and demand like not in a good spot, yeah. want to get out of there. What if I had a Joe Theismann like injury? Like I would probably have been the king of what if I had a Joe Theismann injury. Yeah. That's it. That's what I do every day.
I'm like in shock because we are so similar in so many ways. And this is where like we're completely different, right? I think fear is the most appreciating, energetic thing you can do. It allows you to focus, which is, I think, what Gary does is use the fear to focus on the truth, the gratitude perspective.
Helps me with perspective.
Yeah, because it focuses you on what's real.
To your point, I hate selling fear, but fear is, ironically, along with gratitude, the other balance to just, I desperately wish people could put things into perspective. It's my number one thing that's happening in America right now. I keep telling a lot of my friends, I'm like, look, shit is bad because this is a deeply racist country. Let's just like make it very simple. It's a DNA of the country. You know, coming from Eastern Europe where anti-Semitism is deeply in the DNA, like Jews go to jail, like both of my grandfathers, it's very easy for me to see it in America. It is what it is. However, for as shitty as it is, let's take a step back and put things in perspective. Let's right. understand women, for example, this blew me away. This crushed me and put chills down my spine. I think it was when I was watching Ruth Bader Ginsburg's documentary. I think as of recent as 1970, and this is where it gets hazy. I'm gonna go with five, the year I was born, but I don't think that's right. 73, 77. It was legal for husbands to rape their wives in most of the states in America. Like, you know, I think sometimes we just forget how much advancement and put things in perspective. And it was funny, the way that got kicked in was an elderly African-American woman saw me, her grandson saw me at an event, and she said, she came up to me, she's like, I didn't know who you were until yesterday, and he dragged me to this book signing. She's like, keep telling him what you're telling him. She's like, I wish some of these people knew what I grew up with.
Right.
She was basically, you know, and I think, perspective, man.
But I don't use fear, right? I use love. I mean, yeah. It's a different perspective, but I meditate. I find this place of peace. And so if I'm in an ego-based consciousness, which is fear-based consciousness, I literally do the exact opposite, right? I go back to center to give myself perspective, which allows me to then be accountable, take control of what I'm doing, which is really what you want to do, right? Be accountable, say, look, I attracted this to myself. What am I going to learn from it? And I put myself in the exact same perspective, which is why we're so similar. And I do it out of like this really powerful light instead of a fear that would usually focus me. And I would wake up anxious like for years and years and years. And then I just learned this different way that kept me at peace.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I know you, I pressed this guy when he talked teamwork to me. When we first met, I pressed him because I thought he was just giving me the line that they taught him to
say.
Well,
I wouldn't.
You know, it's all about the team. This guy lives teamwork and you live gratitude.
Well, like I said, I started out by talking about my brothers. So,
yeah, that makes so much sense to me, by the way.
It's ingrained in me. So it was only natural for me to do it. And I was raised in football. So it's the ultimate team sport. You got 11 guys on the field. You can't do anything without those other 10. There's nothing. You can have one great player, but he won't change the game.
As a Hall of Fame corner, when you had a ridiculously good pass rush, ironically, you were even a better corner
absolutely.
Than
before.
Just is
absolutely.
What it is.
And I played with two of the best pass rushers ever played a game, Bruce Smith, Von Miller. I mean, two of the best to ever play the game. And I owe them I can remember a couple picks I got because Von got
100%.
To the quarterback. Bruce Smith got to the quarterback.
Even before the game started.
Oh, absolutely.
That quarterback's got so much thought going into Von destroying
the fear.
His face.
I mean, that
100%.
Fear, I mean, once that
and
settles.
And all you need is that hundredth of a second.
Yeah, that's it. Just a little bit.
Just
and they always
bit.
give me two more seconds. Give me another second. Split second. Elvis Dumervil.
By the way,
another great one.
This is absolutely why I love football. Like, there's, you know what's so funny? I love extremes. And, you know, back to love and fear.
Yeah, yeah.
I love contradictions, right? Clouds and dirt. My whole K-Swiss collaborations. That's what I do. Clouds and dirt. It's why I love, my two favorite sports are boxing and football. And what's interesting about them is they couldn't be more different. Football is truly the team sport. Boxing is truly the nobody else is to blame. Like accountability.
That's right.
At an uncomfortable level.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, toe-to-toe as well. How does gratitude, though, play into teamwork for you?
Well, for one, I mean, I think when you think about all the people that play a role, I mean, it's not just coaches and players. How do we get to the destination where we're going to play, you know, another city? So who set that all up? Who made that transition smooth? So obviously I think starting at the top, you got to have a great leader. And then what trickles down is how grateful is he to the bottom feeder.
And you had one of the best owners and one of the worst owners.
Oh, yeah.
You can't say it, but I can.
You know, and that's what's funny. Both
were my friends.
I've seen it both ways. You've seen an owner that gives all the credit to the bottom guys, and you've seen an owner that takes all the credit to himself. Yeah. You know, and I don't think
and one has a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, and one has none. One has three, actually.
Right.
One has none. So, I mean, just learning from that leadership, that's what I learned about gratitude. Like, man, it's not just about me. I got to thank these people that are not getting the camera time or you know, whatever it is.
Chip, you know what's crazy about gratitude? It's actually how I think about life completely. Like, to your point, and that's such an incredible thing to, you know, I'm sure for all the people that, you know, worked at Denver, Washington during your time, like I'm just thinking right now, if the serendipity of life leads to a person right now who's an intern at Denver, who now is doing whatever they're doing with their lives all these years later, hearing that, that must have felt so nice that a star player actually gave the thought to saying like, yo, like somebody had to make sure that all our luggage was there or like, you know, like checked on the weather before the flight went. Like really stuff. It's actually really interesting how you... It's the first time I've ever thought about serendipity and gratitude as cousins. So I'm sitting here, I'm so happy because I know how great life, you know what I love, by the way? This, I'm just bouncing. You know what's awesome about New York City?
Hold on a second.
When I walk in New York City, this always runs through my mind. It's a grid and I have 800,000, like I always feel like I'm funny. Like I don't walk the same way ever. Like if I have to go somewhere, I'm always doing different shit. Like going three avenues, then two streets. That like I don't know why. It's probably my entrepreneurial chaotic way. Whereas like my dad walks the same exact way every time, and every time I do it, if I run into a stranger, a friend, or something, I'm always like, that's so cool. It's so fucking cool that I could have went one more avenue and then took the, and like basically I think we're completely not in control of anything, which kind of weirdly makes me feel in control of everything.
That's right on.
Do you understand?
I get exactly what you're saying.
And that's where you were going, which is like, it's crazy. Like, actually, you know what this makes me think of in sports? And this is something I want to ask the room because there's a fuckload of people here, by the way. These, you know, if anybody
you're
listening
too popular,
at home,
man.
This entourage, I'm very impressed with these three. What's the story about the NBA Finals with the Cavs and the Warriors the first time where the Cavs were up 2-1, right? And there was some junior, you know, or minor assistant who saw something in film and they switched out Andre Iguodala and somebody, and maybe Harrison, but I don't remember the whole story, but I'm sure somebody who's listening, so hit me up on Twitter. I'm looking at all the faces and I appreciate that nobody's just jumping in and saying they do know, but I do remember very firmly that something happened in that series. And this is what I love about sports and how I think about life, which is why I think all 50, 60, 70-year-olds need to wake up and realize it's the third quarter and or halftime and they got a long way to go. You know, this is the NBA Finals. There's a lot of film on LeBron at this point. He's in his fucking 10th or 12th year at this point. And still, yet, somebody was able to, part of the team, watch film, come up with a hypothesis. Kudos back to good culture.
Yeah.
Coach Kerr has to say yes. A lot of coaches don't have that humility.
Yeah.
But that's why they won the NBA championship. Like they're like now maybe they still would have, but it was a grinding series. 2-1 Cavs, I think, but I could be remembering it wrong. Or 2-2. I don't remember. But then they took the rest of the series pretty easily.
And I think that carried over into the next season.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, the next finals after that.
I just
that.
Feel like it's interesting that coach season insight, they make a switch and it changes everything. And I think about that shit all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of guts to make a call like that because you got to imagine you've done it this way all year. This is what got you here. Now you got to make a switch like that.
And just to be super nerdy, to go like all the way here, as an uncomfortably big Jets fan who's watched every snap since 1982, let me say this because I just want somebody to go on Twitter and talk to me about this, their insight on this. The Jets' good run, you know, I think Mark Sanchez is a good dude and I have a lot of love for him, but like I was always struggling with his play, thought it was disguised by the number one running team in the NFL, the number one defense. But I've never said this publicly, and this is where a hardcore Jets fan's gonna know if they really think. Those Jet teams that had like a good run there between, really from Herm to Mangini to Rex, where they kind of made the playoffs every other year, which was fun for a while, especially in Jets history. They're completely, if you look at those teams, the amount of wins they put on the board because of special teams, because of Mike Westhoff, who's one of the best special teams coaches of all time, because of guys like Brad Smith and Leon Washington. Brad Smith and Leon Washington directly put W's on the board for in seasons where they made the wild card, 9-7, flat out games they won. Brad Smith running it back against Pittsburgh, like Jonathan Carter, the amount of run back touchdowns the Jets had during that era. They just won so many games because of special teams.
That's why it's such the ultimate team sport. Like, nobody's thinking about Leon Washington, right? Nobody. Brad Smith?
I am.
Nobody's thinking about Brad Smith. Everybody thinks he's played in Buffalo and that's it. You know? So, you know, it goes back to you can't do anything by yourself in football. Sanchez, like you said, they ran the football. They played great defense. But who do you remember? Sanchez.
Being of course. But and to his credit, he put up good. He left his best games in those playoff games fine, and I have a lot of love for that. But, like, it's real. Football's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even in sports business, though, you know, sports agentry, I see all these agents trying to buddy up to you when you're playing. And I said, dude, if you want to be an agent, go talk to the equipment manager. Right, treat him with gratitude. And I was like, why would you do that? I said, because that guy will be there for 30 years. They never fire the equipment manager. If you want an inside to the team, he's the one talking to the players. And if they don't have what they need, if he says he could get in their ear and be in the sphere of influence, and he's never going to, presidents will leave, GMs, even owners will switch, they'll keep the equipment manager.
That's fascinating.
And but yet, I learned that because Lee, when I was working with him, he's like, man, you're always just talking to anybody, Dave. You're so nice. You know, you should be hammering up Champ and get him to sign with us. I'm like, no, man, be kind to your future self. This guy is going to make a difference.
Right.
That's become extremely accentuated in our new society. One of the things, I was always a nice person. Back to, like, when you said, you know, I was like, is that your DNA? You're like, yeah. And then you said the brothers thing. And then it was a wrap for me.
Yeah.
Like, natural DNA and environment, that's the punchline. This Freud figured this shit out a long time ago. Like, it's not, I don't know why people are still debating out here. Yeah. Like, it's super simple. Well, to that same point, you know, I was always a good guy. I had kindness in my soul. But the fact that now everybody has a voice and everyone's watching everything. Mm-hmm. Like it's so fun. And people know too. Like, I watch people who hear this podcast, hear Dave say this, have dark hearts, and then go start doing it because it's a tactic. And me watching somebody go into a room and saying, what's up, hello, who does it the way I do it, because it's just in them.
Yeah.
Just in them. Just like for me, liking people turned out to be a good thing with the advent of social media.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But like, and then seeing the person who's doing it where you and your soul can feel it's a tactic and they give a fuck. I love watching that shit.
So that brings me to a question though about that. So if you've got somebody that's not the best teammate now, but they want to be a better teammate, right? Maybe they're working on that. What's a tip on, like, all right, start today. Like, start right now. Here's how you can start to be a better boss. You can be a better leader for your team. You can be a better teammate. You can show gratitude to either the equipment manager or the secretary at your office, or, you know, like something practical and that they can do. Because, you know, we don't believe that you have that dark heart forever. If you want to change, you can change. But what would you tell them to do to get started on that?
For me, I don't tell people what to do, right? Yeah. I may make suggestions or illustrate something by saying, you know, in that situation, like someone told me the other day, I came in late and I said, you know, I'm sorry for being late. Thank you for waiting. He said, whoa, you shouldn't do that. And initially my energy was, what do you mean I shouldn't do that? Instead, they said, right, you know what I do? I come in and I say, thank you for your patience. It has a better energy than saying, sorry, I'm late. It's a better position. But I could feel my ego initially, like, what do you mean? I had to be the need to be right.
You know what's so funny?
And she taught me what to do.
You know what's funny? That has become the number one thing that I am struggling with dealing with in the world. When I used to be late 15 years ago, it was very easy for me to apologize or say thank. I didn't think that way either, you know, which I think is better, and I'll start taking down on it. She taught me too through you, but it didn't feel heavy. Now it kills me because I'm sitting there saying, fuck, this person thinks that I think that I'm more important than them.
Right, your
and
time
it kills me.
Yeah,
me too.
Like, it fucking kills me. Like, it is like the level, it's easily the thing I'm most anxious about in the world today, being late for stuff. I'm running so hard. I have no
helping
gaps
everybody
in my, yeah, you know, like, I was running up here for you guys, and it was the fucking three people part of this fucking posse. Your three homies downstairs that took selfies. They're like, can we get pictures? I'm like, fuck, I gotta go. And they're like, we're with Dave. I'm like, all right, fuck. Like, you know, it's become a huge issue for me. Yeah. And I'm glad to catch that tidbit because I'll start using it.
Yeah, that's a little bit of accountability there. I think if you're listening, man, I think to be a good teammate, you gotta listen. Understand what it takes to reach
your
goal.
What's the best talk you ever had with a teammate that worked out? Like, if you sat right now and thought about whether it's...
That I gave them?
Yep. Whether it was hard, whether it was soft, whether it was just like a wink. Like, if right now, I'm going to let you think a little bit. I'm going to keep going because I'm just very fascinated. Okay. If I had to say right now, for you, you're like, fuck. Because maybe he came up to you later on or maybe never, but you just watched him from afar for years to come and you're like, fuck. Like, is there a singular moment where, like, just for a fun story as an example of...
Well, I mean, I'm seeing something play out now. I think about all the times Chris Harris Jr., okay, he's still playing with the Broncos at a Pro Bowl level. And I just think about all the little meetings we had, all the time we were on the field together. And when he came in as a rookie free agent, you talk about a dog. Like, he didn't give a damn what anybody thought about how he practiced. All he cared about was producing. And I loved that. And I gravitated towards that because... All he cared
scrapping.
About was working, putting
was
the work
scrapping.
In. Yeah, he was hungry, had a chip on his shoulder, and I still see that to this day. So it's like, damn, this guy never lost his fire. And I remember thinking early on, man, I don't care what these vets say on offense, you dominate their ass, you punish them.
You know what's funny about chips on
shoulders?
He still
sticks with it.
I know he does. It's crazy. Yeah. You know what's crazy about chips? To this day, the person I hate the most on earth is Drew Henson. Drew Henson is the reason that fuckface Tom Brady has a chip on his shoulder.
Right, good point.
If Drew Henson never came along, I think Brady could have gone nice and solid in the third or fourth round. Like, I to this day have decided, I'm like so tired of hating Belichick and Brady, I've decided I found a new guy to hate. Now I'm blaming Drew Henson.
They don't give you many reasons to hate
deep.
Him.
He's not winning.
Listen, as a diehard Jets fan, I have the fact that the Jets and the Knicks are my favorite teams by far, and I had to live my whole life up to this point through Jordan and Brady, is just super unfucking.
Still riding Joe Namath, huh? Still riding Joe Namath.
But you live in New York, buddy. You live in New York.
Yeah, I do always say that. You know, that's my favorite thing for Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh fans are really classless. I'm on the record when I go there. And I had this really tough old... My big rule on the road, I go to a ton of road games, is I don't say a word. I have no interest in getting kicked out. I'm definitely not looking for some bums to ruin my record of watching every Jets play. And I always just think, like, I'm one comment away from bullshit getting pulled out and missing a play. Fuck, like, any, like, I'm not even mad to get kicked out. I just can't miss a play. But Steeler fans really bother me. And finally, I just will never forget this. Somebody just ran. I'm like, I looked at him. I just turned around. I said, look, cool. And I'm very happy that your football team, not you, are good. I go, but let's call it what it is. You live in a shit city. And that's become like the best chant for me and my friends. Pittsburgh's a shit city, on the record.
I always say, what do you see when you open your door? Pittsburgh. There you go.
Yeah. I don't even want to get into the Pittsburgh conversation. I have real feelings.
Right.
About Ben Roethlisberger. And others. So anyway, what else?
Yeah.
I got like
so,
2 more minutes.
Yeah, one of the other things we talk about is, you know, everything should be relational and nothing should be transactional. You know, like building these authentic relationships. What do y'all do to work on that all the time to make sure that you're not trying to transact? We are trying to build these relationships.
Well, I think just being genuine. I mean, what are you really like? You know, I'm just trying to be myself, you know, always. I think it's hard to be something else. So it's always natural for me to just be myself. I don't have to remind myself to be who I am. It's just, you know, either you gravitate towards me or you don't. Right. But one thing you're going to realize is I'm going to be genuine, and we either do business together or we don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to step out of myself just to please you. So down the road, 5 years later, you're not saying, oh, I thought this guy was this or that. No, I'm going to be that same guy, and I'm going to be respectful. I'm going to be dependable, accountable, all the things you need me to be as a business partner.
Right.
For me, it started just with being of service, and I thought that was it. Yeah. Like, if I could be of service to people and help them, then it was a relationship. But it actually took on a different mode the last few years for me. It's, I actually need to ask for help. Yeah. You know, like I'm really good, and I know you and I have a competition who can do most for each other, and you actually keep a list, I think. But I started saying, you know what? I got to start asking G for help. He knows so much about, and the old me would only been worried about helping you with your sports agency, helping you. Now I ask for help, and that's a real relationship. We help each other.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm not there yet. I think my greatest gift is my biggest weakness. I am unbelievably uncomfortable with giving up the leverage of the person that's given more in the relationship. And it makes me unbelievably popular, but leads to a potential place of resentment. And it has been something that I've been spending an enormous amount of time on. It is uncomfortable at a level. I built the amount of children that have come into the universe, into a family business, and have built an enormous business for their parents and left with nothing is low. I couldn't even feel the uncomfortableness of my parents, the humans that put me on the fucking earth. I needed to somehow at least settle the score that I had to go in and give up my prime youth and work 7 days a week to build this monster business and then leave with nothing and start over. That's great, but in my more mature state, I have started the conversation with myself, which is, that's a control thing, which is fine. But I need to be thoughtful because I think where it's leading me to is enormous popularity with an ungodly amount of potential in my 80s to resent everything and everyone. And I want to start chipping away at it now because it's become very clear to me that that's real.
How do you start that though?
By just saying what I said out loud.
Yeah.
Right? You know, that's a great start. Okay. That's a great start. Okay. First, I needed to get there fully in my head before I would ever say something like that to a world, let alone this room. And now practice.
Yeah.
You know, everything's practice.
It's a muscle, yeah.
Practice. You know, and feeling comfortable to letting somebody help. It's just not in me.
Yeah. Practice is boring. But you gotta love,
God, I love
necessary.
Practice.
You gotta love it.
Though. You learn to love it.
Practice, man. I love the process. I fucking love it.
Me too.
I like. I always think funny things. Like, it's funny we brought this up. Nowadays I'm like, man, if I had a musical bone in my body, I'd be the biggest rapper in the world.
Nice.
Because the way I talk works. Like, yeah. I'd be like, I fucking would dominate it. And literally in that weird mind place. One time I was like, oh, and I would sample Iverson's Practice. I would put out a song of Love and Practice, and I would sample Iverson. Like, that's the random shit I think of. I fucking love Practice that much that I've multiple times thought, if I was a rapper, I would sample Iverson talking about Practice.
Well, that's how I describe you, dude, is you're the Eminem of entrepreneurship.
But you
right?
can be a
He's
writer.
Eminem.
You, can be
you
a
are Eminem,
I can't
man.
Write for shit, champ. It's all, like, I, yeah, that's what's so crazy. I lost that on both. I've got the thoughts, but I can't write for it would have been all in the booth from the top of the dome.
Says the guy with four New York Times bestsellers. Well,
yeah. Five. Right.
Five, sorry.
We didn't put the fifth book in there yet.
Somebody's going to send that back to you, though, that clip of Practice. It's going to be dubbed
over.
Course, you're
going
to have your own rap
I'm
song
sure.
now.
All right, I got to wrap up. Anything else I can sneak in for no, you? Guys, do you want 10 more minutes with these guys? I can do my next meeting out there, and you can
yeah, I mean, if you don't
I talked
mind,
a bunch anyway.
That'd be
yeah,
great. Awesome.
Keep doing it.
Get the hell off the show, brother.
Congratulations again.
You're awesome. You thank you.
Keep going.
All right. The ratings just dropped by a million.
Well, I'm still glad to have 10 minutes with y'all, and we will make sure.
Stay
that...
Stay tuned still with Scott, Dave, and Champ. He asked what your best speech or moment was.
The kids.
They're worried.
It's not one moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a process, right?
Yeah, it's a process. I mean, it's just, I just think about all the conversations.
Right.
It was a collection of them, so.
I think that's the weirdest thing about social media, and I know it impacts him a lot, and mm-hmm. you guys are building on the same platform.
Right.
But the weirdest thing for me is just, you know, I'm here in New York, and a guy can come up to you and literally in tears, thank you for change. Like, you know, he's like, yeah. This guy came in, he's like, dude, I listen to you every day. I'm about to quit, you know, or this happened, and, you know, I watched that video, and I just had to tell you, and he started crying, right? He's like, thank you so much, and I'm thinking, wow, how powerful is it to capture what you're doing? Because, right, that little conversation now happens again and again and again. And it's such a blessing if you have that real message of authenticity.
Yeah.
Like, he's so authentic, you're authentic. It can really impact people.
Yeah, I love the fact that I could give back something to people who need it, you know? I mean, a lot of times people don't need you, but when they tell you, oh, this really helped me, I mean, it's gratifying. Yeah. And I don't understand. Like, I would always question guys that I played with who wouldn't teach the younger guys. And I'm like, why would you want all that knowledge to yourself? Like, these guys want to eat too. Let's teach them. It only helps the game. Plus, it'll help you, because when you say things out loud, it just
you learn resonates. Yourself.
Yeah, yeah. You start learning. You can learn from them. I mean, don't box yourself in and think, I have everything. I'm keeping it to myself, because that guy might have something for you as well. So, I mean, it's reciprocated a lot, and I think you just have to just keep trying to be that person that wants to teach and give back, teach, give back, and things come back to you.
When I said shared knowledge, right? Yeah. We were talking about before, it's like, you can work on yourself, but like in a team, you can't practice by yourself, you know, and run the plays,
right?
You got to practice together as a team and grow together as a team. And that's really kind of what we're hoping to do through Grit Leadership, right? Just like bring these people together so that they can bring their team together and all learn together. Cause you can't, it's really hard to go back to the office if you're one person and then share it with the team. If the team didn't experience it together.
That's right. I mean,
cool thing about the three of us is we will sell out every single summit just from our posse alone.
Yeah.
That's
you
right.
You don't have to invite anyone. Yeah. Hey.
We got to fill something.
There's no seats.
I just picked the right venue size. We'll
just
make
tell
sure
them, yeah, we're going to show up and boom. It's amazing.
And you said it right, man. It's one thing to tell me, but if I have a team with me, they all need to hear it the same way I heard it. Now, can I go back and say it the same way? Probably not. But it's always good to hear different voices saying the same things. I mean, one thing, you know, I think a lot of dads always have trouble teaching their kids because they hear you all the time.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, you got to hear different voices, you know, people with different perspectives, but they all saying the same things.
Right.
It's all things that's
third party validator, right?
Yeah.
So, and they watch you all the time.
And it's this thing where, you know, what we can do through Grit Leadership is we can have these managers and leaders that are doing the best they can. But when Champ and Dave say it on stage, they go, oh, yeah, they've made it to the top of their career, so they must know what they're talking about. Your manager's like, man, I say that same stuff
like
to you.
Yeah, like it's something different,
you know,
but it's not.
Every day.
But this is important for dads and moms to hear, right? So why you keep telling these lessons. Yeah. Your kids are not listening to you. They will watch you, but they won't listen. But what you're doing is planting seeds. Yeah. So when you plant a seed and someone like Champ Bailey says, teamwork's important, and your dad has been telling you you're too selfish, teamwork. And when Champ Bailey says it, all of a sudden that seed's been in there, it grows.
Right.
Right. So sometimes we're just the stimulus, right? The water on the seed. And that's why I think the seeds that you place in your mind, right? I talk about faith. That's what puts it there. We cannot be surprised when you plant corn if you get corn. So you got to plant good thoughts in your head.
That's right.
So those are what grow. The problem is right now I see is that we're allowing people to have bad thoughts, right? And those are seeds. Mm-hmm. And then somebody reinforces it out there and says, yeah, this is okay. We're separate. We're better. We're inferior. Whatever it is, these negative thoughts.
Yeah.
And it grows just like corn. And then putting faith in the wrong things, they're surprised when corn comes out when they planted corn. Right? It just blows me away.
When it's the confirmation bias, right? If we're thinking these negative thoughts and then something bad happens, it's just confirming, oh, yeah, I'm not good enough or I'm weak, I'm too weak or whatever these things are. But like I learn from y'all all the time, like just, you know, planting those good seeds, putting those good positive thoughts in your brain, we can do the same thing when something good happens. Now we can double down on that and triple down on that. I mean, Dave, you talk a lot about frequency and vibration. And can you just tell the listeners a little bit about, like, you know, I love when you talk about, you know, nothing vibrates as fast as the truth. And you can only understand that at which you vibrate or
equal
lower
to your lesson.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So
exactly.
Can you kind of explain that concept? And
yeah, I've kind of even clarified it more to me. Here's the detachment that people have is that a lot of people just think, you know, if I say this, it would happen. Or if I do this, it will happen. Or if I think this, they think of direct manifestation, right?
Yeah.
If I, you know, and if I work, it will happen. There's a continuum that takes place. It's think, say, do, believe. And that affects your genetics. It affects your DNA. What you think, say, do, and believe affects your DNA. And that DNA changes slowly. It's like a muscle, and it creates a frequency. It's a signal out there. And that signal, the higher the signal is, the more you can be aware of, and the more you can do three things. The higher your signal or frequency or vibration, the stronger your force is. So when I speak, more and more people hear it. When he speaks, even more, because that frequency is high. Mm. He was talking about the spectrum. He had all types of people, old, young, race, doesn't matter to him, religion, everybody loves Gary because he has the wide spectrum of that frequency. And then finally, clarity.
Right? The clarity of your signal. Now, that's what makes you resonate. So yeah. I'll stand on stage and tell people, change your life, say thank you before you go to bed, and thank you when you wake up. And thousands of people will wait in line to tell me that I've changed their life, and they're now going to say thank you. They have heard that a million times. Mm-hmm. But I have a different strength of my signal, a different frequency of a spectrum, and all I've done a lot of times with the power of clarity is watered the seed that their grandmother, their mother, their friends, everybody in their life has said, Dace, thank you. You'll be better off to be thankful, be grateful, be gracious. All those seeds, and they weren't listening, they were watching, and all of a sudden the powerful water comes and boom, it grows.
Wow. Powerful.
What do you think about that, Jim?
I mean, amazing. I just the way he articulates it, I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, because I think about everything my parents taught me. And then I would have coaches kind of reiterate those things. And right. Now it just made sense. You know, it's like you need to hear somebody else say it, you know. Right. And I mean, I've had coaches all my life, and that's who I would listen to the most. Because
now I
was
trying Dave
to be
Meltzer
a great
videos.
Yeah,
we see, all
now,
are.
Now I'm that's watching right. Dave all the time.
Yeah, and Gary, he's really got water everywhere. Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, Gary, he reminds me a lot about some of the coaches that I've had, you know, very loud, direct, great personality,
opinionated,
but they always saying something with substance. Like,
yeah,
just listen to the message. That's why I love what he says or how he says it, because he's rowdy about it. But if you really listen, I mean, it's something everybody can use. And I don't care about how he delivers
me
it.
Me neither.
I just want to just give me something with substance.
And yeah,
I'm gonna run.
Keep
with
watering
it.
Me. Hope you enjoyed this episode of The Playbook, but more importantly, I want you to join my text community. I'm doing a lot of fun things there, one-on-one conversations, trainings, giveaways, and it's the first place I release all the information that I'm giving. So join me at my text platform, 949-298-2905. That's 949-298-2905. Join my exclusive community.